Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, comic book and pop culture fans. It's the moment you've been waiting for. Today, after all these years, we welcome two of the biggest geeks in the region to talk comics. First, we have Ron Mars. This guy killed off Green Lantern, Hal Jordan. Ron has written major storylines for nearly every top comics publisher, from Marvel and DC to Top Cow and Dark Horse, Silver Surfer, Green Lantern, Witchblade, Star Wars, Conan. He is the pen behind some epic storylines. Also joining us this afternoon is pop culture journalist Rick Marshall. Rick is the former editor of MTV News' Splash Page blog and has been dubbed a professional geek by the likes of ABC, CBS, CNN, Spike TV, his wife, and more. He's an industry expert, regularly providing news, reviews, and columns for IFC.com, Movies.com, Digital Trends, and more. Now, you can check in via the phone lines. That's how we do these call-in shows. It's 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. I would recommend calling, otherwise it's going to be a long hour. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. This is our first comic book and pop culture show. And I should mention at the outset that the last producer we had, Patrick Donges, also a comic book nut, and tried several times to get a comic book show together. Now, our new producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, also a comic book nut, managed to do it, and she has a little insider help here. Rick and Ron, welcome to the show. Nice to have you guys here.
Thanks, Ray. It's great to be here.
So, Rick Marshall, married to Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Who's geekier, you or Jessica?
Oh, I'm definitely geekier. She's geek by association, though. She surprises me sometimes. She comes out with these little references every now and then that it's paying off. Somehow it's rubbing off on her. I'm kind of shocked.
Well, this is great. It's nice to have you both here. And, you know, I collected comics long ago. You guys must have been maybe not even born. Early 70s, I collected comics. They're standard superhero stuff, right? Now, I looked at a comic, the Dark Knight, everything's dark and depressing. What happened here?
It's grim and gritty. That's the
Gritty. That's
term,
a good way.
The term, the popular term, it's grim and gritty.
So what happened?
Some people would say we grew up, but I think it's a reflection of society in general. I mean, our entertainment is darker in general. You know, 2 weeks ago we were all talking about the outcome of a Meth Kings story. You probably wouldn't have seen that story on network TV.
All right, that's
in
a good
the
point.
Early 70s. There's a great range of comics out there too. I think generally the superhero stuff is a little bit darker and more mature, but I think there's also a wider range of stuff for kids, for all ages readers. I think generally when people talk about comics, we generally associate them with superheroes, but there's a lot more material out there. I think more material now than there ever has been.
Certainly more now than there was when I was a kid. Now, that the voice you just heard, Ron Mars, who is a comics writer, and you've written some of the old classics, Green Lantern, etc. So, I mean, how do you switch gears?
I don't like to eat pizza every day either. I try to have as many different projects on my plate as possible, and some of them are superheroes, and some of it's science fiction, and some of it's horror. I like to flex different muscles, but you also try to remain true to the kind of story that you're telling. I try not to cross any lines that I wouldn't be comfortable, you know, handing my 10-year-old son in a superhero comic.
And that's a real trick because, every now and then I'll pick up some comics. Number one, they're not 20 cents anymore. Number two, for my 11-year-old, I really have to make sure that this is okay.
Well, I think you have to actually treat the same way you do movies, and now it's becoming the same way with video games and that sort of thing, where before comics, you know, for comics were this thing that everyone thought of for kids, but now it's, I guess, biff, bang, pow, comics aren't for kids anymore.
It's for us old timers.
The normal headline that gets used all the time when there's a comic story, but yeah, it's the same thing. And also, it sort of is a reciprocal thing, because movies nowadays are being pulled from comics so often that people are writing comics in order to basically create a storyboard for a film a lot of the time. And so it's a constant debate in comics. Do you are you writing to make a movie, or are you writing a comic? And I think that's sort of showing in the tone of them too.
1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Ron Mars is our guest. Rick Marshall is our guest. You mentioned films. There have been some great ones. The Avengers was a great film.
Absolutely.
And your wife, Jessica, made sure that I saw the Wonder Woman teaser that's been online and causing a lot of chatter. And frankly, I was underwhelmed. I didn't see the invisible plane, and so then I tuned out.
It's funny you bring up a Wonder Woman. I actually just wrote a column today for movies.com that I'm already taking a lot of heat for, because I basically suggested that we might as well give up the idea of a Wonder Woman movie for now. Let's just move on to other characters who I think would be much better off on the big screen. Naturally, I'm getting a lot of flack for it, but I just don't think Wonder Woman works on the big screen.
I mean, we'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, I think we might find out sometime. I don't know if that's going to be on the big screen anytime soon. Maybe TV.
Why doesn't it work out?
Well, I think there's so much disagreement over what's the right origin to use, what's the right costume to use, and does the things that worked in the Linda Carter era actually work today? And then there's all that troubling stuff about how actually Wonder Woman came about, the creation of Wonder Woman. Once you make that movie, you're going to have all those behind-the-scenes documentaries. You're going to have all those, like, you know, how some... It's not some person sitting in a... some friend sitting in a room and coming up with the idea of a superhero. Wonder Woman, when she was created by a psychologist who sort of wanted to do this this feminist hero, but he was really into some weird things on the side.
Oh, really?
So all this bondage stuff.
Okay.
And, you know, Wonder Woman's original weakness was being tied, having her wrists tied together by a man made her lose her powers.
Oh, I see. Well,
yeah, there's no like underlying psychology to that stuff for, you know,
yeah.
William Moulton Marsden.
Who
I think also created the polygraph, right?
Yes, and yes, that the lasso of truth.
So this
is great. This is a great uncomfortable spot to go to the phone. 1-800-348-2551. Alice in Stafford Springs, Connecticut. You're first.
Yes, hi. Well, that's terrific. Thank you very much for taking my call. My husband has a very, very old and extensive collection of science fiction magazines going back to the 1940s and early 1950s. And I'm wondering if there's any market for those today, and if so, how does one go about placing them appropriately, so to speak?
Well, I think your best bet's probably going to be to go to a comic shop, bring the comics, bring a sample of the comics maybe to a comic shop, to one of the types of shops that deal in that type of stuff. Magazines are sort of a hard sell. It really depends on what's in the individual magazines. For instance, if there's a letter to the editor written by someone who later on went on to become really famous, that could make that specific magazine very valuable. The first work by a certain artist or writer can be valuable, but as a whole, it's hard to gauge.
Yeah, I think it's a complete guess, but I think the rule of thumb is they're never really as valuable as you think they are.
That's what I'm concerned about, because this is on the old rag stock, and a lot of it is yellowed and brown and very brittle. So I was just wondering if there is, in fact, any value. My husband has insisted on keeping cartons and cartons and cartons of these, the old science fiction magazines with the early Asimov and Heinlein stories in it, and he won't part with them. And I'm just wondering if we should just burn them.
Well, I think
don't burn them.
Yeah, the internet actually gives you a really great way to price these things and find value that we didn't have way back in the day. In that you can actually kind of, once you catalog what you have, you can, if you feel like taking the time, you can look around online to find out if anything's valuable. Look up the individual magazine titles with the issue numbers and see what's out there.
That's great. Alice, thanks a lot for the call. You know, I should suggest to everyone, and certainly call about whatever you want, but this really isn't a collecting show. But if you guys want to weigh in on your collections, that's okay too. But we're really talking about comics in general and the effect on pop culture and the amazing explosion of the movies. And there have been so many great movies. Now, what do you guys feel about this whole Dark Knight series, the more recent one?
Hey, Batman's cool. You know, it's a more real-world take on Batman. It's certainly
But is it a more real-world take? The guy's walking around in a suit.
Well, I think Christopher Nolan would tell you it's a more of a real world take.
Well, he has a couple of million reasons.
And a couple of billion reasons.
Yeah.
Obviously, the public embraces that more serious Batman take. I think Batman is one of the characters that is a fictional icon. It's not even an American icon at this point. To me, it's a fiction icon, just like Tarzan and Sherlock Holmes. Batman and Superman also fill that role, and they are open to a bunch of interpretations. So you get, you know, the campy Adam West version.
Yeah.
You get the, you know, the growly Christian Bale version, and everything else in between. It's you know, that's going to be an evergreen. You're always going to have Batman movies at some point. To me, this is going to be like James Bond eventually, where there's just going to be a series of movies, and you'll get a different guy in the suit, like Ben Affleck coming up.
Oh, really? You're kidding me, right?
No, Ben Affleck is going to be Batman in Batman versus Superman.
Yes.
Batman versus... Now, okay, you bring up Superman. They've had a heck of a time rebooting that film series, haven't they? They've given it a couple of shots recently.
Very much so, yeah. There's been a stalled one. Prior to Man of Steel, there was a stalled project. That character is a bit rough to sort of bring to the screen. While it has this amazing iconic status, it's also hard to wrap your head around in how to bring it down to a level that you can kind of relate to, associate with as the average moviegoer.
Yeah,
so
I think Batman is, despite the fact that Batman is a orphaned billionaire who dresses up like a bat and beats up people in alleys.
It's a common story.
He's more relatable than Superman because at least he's one of us. I mean, Superman's an alien. And Superman, in a lot of ways, is an artifact from the 30s. And I think the character still works. I think it's a brilliant character that you can put a lot of interpretations to. But it's a little tougher to get an audience for because of the truth, justice, and American way stuff. I think I think everybody understands revenge.
Yeah.
I don't think as many people now plug into, I'm going to do the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. I think that's, you know, goes back to what we talked about earlier in the show with just a general darkening of society and of our entertainment.
That's Ron Mars, also joined here today by Rick Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. We talk comics today and more of your calls coming up. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. More Vox Pop on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Garrison and the Hudson Highlands, featuring an 18-hole golf course, restaurants, Hudson River views, and getaway and golf packages, thegarrison.com. Saratoga Health and Wellness, providing a 12-week weight loss program run by nutritionists, exercise physiologists, saratogahealthandwellness.com. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff. The time is 2:21. We're joined by Ron Mars, who is a comics writer, and also Rick Marshall, who has opined on many things to do with comics and pop culture. And we welcome your calls at 1-800-348-2551. Ed in Columbus, Ohio already. You're on.
Oh, hey. How are you doing? Good. I've been a comic reader for about 35 years. I feel like in the last 10 years or more, comic readers have generally become increasingly cynical, and it's kind of interesting because that's happening with the comic book readership, but at the same time you have movies like Avengers and Dark Knight who are getting new comic book readers. But it's kind of an interesting dichotomy because they're losing all the old readers because they're so cynical. I was curious what you guys felt about that, about keeping comic book readership alive and not losing the readers because they're becoming so cynical and bashing stuff on the internet and stuff like that.
You know, I think comics are a great way to tell a story. Obviously, that's what I've been doing for more than 20 years, and you know, God willing, I'll do it for another 20 because I don't want to have to get a real job. comics, like all of our other entertainment, are a reflection of where we are as a society, and right now, I think our entertainment is very segmented. We're all searching for niches that we enjoy. Comics are no different. There's more of a variety of comics right now than I think there ever have been. Even You know, even back in the glory days, the 40s and 50s, where you had comics about everything, I think we really have more genre diversification right now than even back then. And to me, the way that we're going to reach an audience is digital. Digital is the new newsstand. I mean, when we were kids, we would go to the spinner rack in the supermarket or the drugstore and pick up books for a quarter or 35 cents or whatever.
Yep.
That's gone. That's not really a viable delivery method for what we do anymore. The best method, I think, that we have for the people that don't want to be in the comic store every Wednesday for the new product is digital. You can have virtually any comic you want at any time that you want with the click of a button.
I think, too, that a lot of that cynicism comes from a lot of the folks who have been reading the same things over and over and over again. They don't really want to leave their comfort zone, whether it be superheroes, whether it be a particular publisher's superheroes, that type of thing. But what's great is as more people come to the comic shops, whether via movies they've seen, stories they've heard about, things like that, they don't come with those sort of packaged interests, and they're willing to actually check out some of the new stuff that's out there. If something just seems like a good story, they're looking at it the same way they go into a bookstore and pick up a novel by reading the back of it, and, hey, this sounds like a good story. Yeah. Let's check it out. Where the cynicism sometimes, you know, I think just comes from people who haven't left that comfort zone and just keep reading the same Superman stories over and over and over again.
Well, that brings me also, because both Marvel and DC have rebooted their whole lines in the last couple of years, and that's led to a lot of cynicism among lines for a long time. Do you think that was a good idea for those companies to reboot the lines to try to get new people in, or do you feel like they might have shot themselves or put some out?
Well, I think the longtime readers get offended if you reboot the line. They feel like that might be a jumping off point. But, you know, the tradition of comics up until, I don't know, maybe even 20 years ago, was that the audience turned over every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Because you read them from when you were, you know, 8 or 10 up until you discovered, you know, for the guys, until you discovered Girls in Cars, and then you stopped reading them.
Yeah.
And so the audience turnover was expected, so that these were cyclical stories, and the Fantastic Four, you know, fought Dr. Doom on a fairly regular basis, but it was new to that audience. Now we're retaining the audience more. It's a smaller audience, but we retain them a lot longer. So the chances for a new audience to slot themselves in to find a spot where, okay, I can hop onto this book are fewer and farther between. So I think, you risk losing the audience, you risk alienating the audience, but you have to constantly be trying to bring in new readers. Otherwise, it's just a slow dwindling of the audience.
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. And, you know, there are so many, it seems to me, that there are so many more independent comics. In other words, back in the old days, we had Marvel, we had DC, Gold Key, and maybe a couple other that never made it to my newsstand. Now there seems to be so many.
There are a lot more publishers, and frankly, you don't even need a publisher at this point to do your comic.
See, I disagree with your whole thesis about, you know, going digital. So to me, you know, you have to hold the comic book.
Oh, yeah. My preference?
Yeah.
I want to hold it. I want a hardcover of it. I want a hardcover artifact. Because one of the main reasons that I do what I do is that I love the art, and I want the art as big and glorious as possible. But I also know that not everybody has that take on it. And certainly, like for my kids, to them, there's no difference between picking up a comic that's lying on the coffee table or reading one on an iPad. I think more and more that's going to be how we deliver the single issue content to the readership, and then we're going to have the collected editions that people go buy in, you know, comic stores and Barnes and Noble and
never open.
Else.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I used to think the same thing. I had a collection of hardcovers, these big, massive volumes of things, and then I started moving a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then I moved to New York City, where you have these tiny little apartments, and that probably cut. I think every move cut my collection in half, and also just traveling around. If you're commuting and you want to read a book, a massive, absolute, comprehensive edition of Watchmen or anything else, you know, these massive graphic novels that are out there, they're not exactly good subway reading.
Well, okay, and I will grant you that. It's like the old bringing vinyl albums. I used to go from apartment to apartment with crates of vinyl albums. Eventually it got tiring. So I see your point. However, there seems to be a lack of permanence to a digital copy, as opposed to, say, I have this.
Oh,
I have Green Lantern number 100. It's here. I'm going to put it in a bag when I'm done reading it and save it.
Well, that's the difference between the collector mentality and the reader mentality.
I suppose.
And neither one is right. Neither one is wrong.
Yeah.
But it's all in how you want to consume it. When comics sold in the millions, you know, in the 40s, obviously, they were disposable income. They were disposable products.
Yeah.
You bought them for a nickel or a dime, and you read them and you traded them with your friends. To a certain extent, I think the digital marketplace brings us back to that, where it's not a disposable product, but it's a product that you can have whenever you want it for the convenience, and you can have somebody else in the house read it.
You don't have to worry about tearing the pages. So that
you don't have to get it slabbed and
peanut butter and whatever. Yeah. All right, let's go to Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, you're on Vox Pop. Hello.
Hi. Well, I guess I'm going in a slightly different direction from what you're talking about, but I'm just wondering if anybody recalls, either you guys, which I kind of doubt at this point, but anybody in the audience remembers one of my favorite comics, and it wasn't a single issue devoted to it, but it was like an episode or something within another comic book. It was Mary Jane and Sniffles.
Sniffles.
Mary Jane and Sniffles.
Anybody?
No, not at all.
I'm baffled.
Oh.
Okay, you've stumped the panel. That's great.
I knew it.
Well, anyway, it was about a little girl, and she had a friend. It was a mouse.
Mm.
And something would happen, and the adventure would start, and Mary Jane would say, it was magical. Mary Jane would say, poof, poof, piffles. Make me just as small as Sniffles.
Oh, well, that's... Oh.
And then, of course, she would shrink down like Alice in Wonderland to this tiny little mouse size, and they would go charging off solving problems and mysteries.
Hijinks would ensue.
Wow, I'll tell you what, Harriet, I'll bet you there are several people in the audience who have heard of this, and maybe they can weigh in on Mary Jane and Sniffles.
Okay, and also, I just want to mention some of my favorite comics. Aside from, Superman and Silver Surfer and all those guys, was the Donald Duck, Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, yeah.
When Uncle Scrooge decided to go looking for a treasure.
Well, it's funny. Is that
a mythical treasure. And
those
he went after
Daffy
the gold.
Duck, Scrooge McDuck comics are actually huge in other countries
really?
Still. Like, they're like the number one comic sold in several countries.
Really?
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it's huge stuff. And actually, that particular Scrooge McDuck story is regarded as a classic. It's a Carl Barks story.
The Golden Fleece? When
he
went after the Golden Fleece? Oh, it's one of my total favorites.
Well, you have good taste. Harriet, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Ron Mars and Rick Marshall, our guests. We talk comics today on Vox Pop. Doug in Cherry Plain, are you on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I thought I'd riff on what you guys were talking about earlier with comfort zones and stuff. And so I guess it's a two-part question. Like, thanks to the recent success of the superhero movies and stuff, have you guys seen any increased interest in Hollywood towards comics from other genres, like a sci-fi comic that they would think of turning into a movie, or a fantasy comic or anything like that?
Absolutely.
Do you think that the public would be interested in that, or do you feel like they want to be in their comfort zone and just watch the superhero movies?
I think that Hollywood is actually extremely interested in non-superhero properties, mainly because they don't need to deal with existing backstory, history, decades of storytelling that they have to account for in an origin story. Hollywood is going after very rabidly the original sci-fi stories, fantasy stories, all that types of stuff right now. I mean, it's actually, I think, one of your easiest ways to get a movie made these days seems to be to make a comic book of it first.
Well, they're in some ways they're prefab storyboards. You can show your comic to an agent, to a producer, and they immediately get it. They don't have to sit there and read a script. And I have friends in Hollywood who have said that in the past Hollywood ran on fear because everybody was afraid that somebody else would grab that property, would make a mint off of something. So it used to run on fear, and now I'm told it runs on lazy. Because it's actually a lot of work to read an entire 120-page script. So somebody can read a comic and just, you know, just sort of absorb it in fairly short order and see what it might look like on the screen, man, they love that.
Well, it makes sense. You've got character designs, you've got dialogue, you've got all the beats out there. Yeah. You've got everything kind of put together already for you. And Hollywood, they've been buying up comic book options now before the comic is even on shelves.
Wow.
Like, that's happening a lot now.
So, Doug, thanks a lot for the call. So, Ron, are they buying your options? Do you get a good chunk of change for this?
Not yet. We've had discussions, as they say.
Interesting.
But things we haven't signed one yet. But it's certainly when you do creator own work, which is something that you know, which is not Marvel or DC
right.
stuff.
So, if you write for them, it's theirs.
Right. It's theirs. They own it. Whatever you create, they own it. And you know that going in.
Right.
There's no crying in baseball. There shouldn't be any crying in work for Hire
yeah.
Comics either.
Yeah.
That's the deal. You get to play with all those wonderful icons, but you know that at the end of the day, you put it back on the shelf and it's theirs.
Yeah.
Creator-owned stuff, which is just created with me, with an artist. We come up with an idea and we go to a publisher and publish it. That's where the real fun is. That's where, you know, that's where there are no rules. You just get to do whatever you want. And at the end of the day, you own that. And it certainly Robert Kirkman, who created The Walking Dead and owns The Walking Dead, has certainly done okay
yeah,
for himself.
I'm sure he's got a couple of houses now. Right? A condo, maybe?
Yeah, and, you know, literally here's a guy who 10 years ago was a, you know, struggling comic book writer in Kentucky, and now he's got one, you know, hugely rated TV series and another one on the way.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know, and by all means, good for him. That's the brass ring in a lot of ways. But even if that doesn't happen for your creator-owned book, you still have the satisfaction, I own this, this is exactly what I want it to be. And
yeah.
the creator-owned stuff that I've done, I'm probably more proud of because it's all a product of myself and the rest of the creative team, and it's exactly what we intended.
Yeah, that's Ron Mars. We're also joined by Rick Marshall. And gentlemen, here we go. One of our crack staff here at WAMC came in with a printout, a Dell comic. I can't see the date. It's a 10-center, so that must be, what, about 1955, something in that range, maybe a little later. Mary Jane and Sniffles comics. There's Mary Jane having tea with the mouse. There's some bees and a giant mushroom. So that's a little odd.
Now, Sniffles, the mouse, looks a little familiar to me now, so I'm thinking maybe that was an animated feature before movies or even on early TV that ended up being adapted.
Well, there
to
comics. You go.
So the comics TV relationship was a two-way street even back then.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. Julian in Clifton Park is on. Hi, Julian. Hello.
Oh, I think you want to say Juven in Clifton.
What's the name? I'm sorry.
Juven, G-U-V-E-N.
Okay, well, fair enough. I'm sorry, it said something else. But go right ahead.
I have a question for your guest, but let me set it up this way. I grew up in Turkey as a child, and my parents subscribed for me a comic book called Pekosbil. Pekosbil was in Texas. He had a beautiful horse, very handsome. And one important thing that Pekosbil never carried a gun. He always resolved his conflicts by using his rope. Later in life, I really realized that, especially in today's scenarios, always conflict is solved by killing the other side. Yet Pekosbil never killed anybody. It really affected my life so much that it is possible to negotiate instead of fighting and either disappearing or making the other side disappear. When I came to this country 45 years ago, I expected that everybody would know Pecosville. Nobody knows Pecosville.
Oh. Oh,
I went to Texas, nobody knows Pecosville. I lived in Oklahoma. I searched every little corner of bookstores. No, I've never seen anything like that that resembles the Pecosville. Does anybody remember or know who Pecosbil was?
Guys?
I've actually heard of Pecosbil before, but this is also another one of those things, kind of like the Scrooge McDuck comics and things like that, that depending on different countries, there's certain comics that are huge there, that are just massive that are just totally under the radar here in the U.S. And I see it come up a lot. Like when during travels, I'll go to some other country and there'll be like this massive. I'll go to a comic shop usually in different countries, and there'll be massive displays of these characters that I've never seen before here in the U.S. And they're definitely U.S. made comics, and it's really fascinating that for some reason this caught on there, and it just caught on like wildfire and never did here.
Wow, that's really something. Well, thanks a lot for the call. You know, I think it comes down to mediation not quite as exciting as crime fighting, you know.
Well, you know, they still have a whole lot of super. I mean, one of the biggest controversies with Man of Steel was the whole, wait a minute, Superman's not supposed to kill, but, you know.
Oh, he kills in that flick?
And
I have not seen
this
it.
This is
a spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert. All right, there is some killing that goes on.
You're actually supposed to say the spoiler alert before
right.
you say the spoiler.
Well, maybe we can spin around the world.
What's the statute of limitations on this?
Turn back time. All right, let's get one more call before the break. It's Terrence in New Paltz. Terrence, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
You were talking about Batman earlier, and I was wondering if you've ever noticed that his personality can be indicated by his costume color. What I mean by that is you take a look at, say, Adam West or the Brave and the Bold cartoon. He has a blue costume, but the more dark ones, like the Dark Knight and that sort of thing, he has a black costume. And I wonder if I'm the only one who's ever noticed that correlation.
I think it's just sort of changed over time and evolved as different artists take their stab at it. But, you know, it's all the weird things, like, you know, the length of the ears has changed over time in his costume and utility belts and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's definitely had some dark stories where he wore a lighter costume. But, yeah, for the most part, he has gotten darker. And it's part of the whole Dark Knight thing.
Well, and, you know, just in purely realistic terms, you know, a guy in a black bat suit looks kind of cool on a film. You know, he looks pretty cool like that up on the big screen if he's wearing, you know, powder blue and tights. Not so tough. He doesn't instill fear into, you know, cowardly criminals.
Bright yellow insignia is sort
depends
of
on the criminals.
Giveaway.
I mean, if the criminals are dressed up like Jokers with hats, you know, Cesar Romero, then they're probably easily frightened. Well, anyway, Terrence, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to take a break here, okay?
All right.
Thanks a lot. It's Vox Pop on WAMC Comics. Yes, Ron Mars, Rick Marshall. We hit the home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, New York, a specialty health food store with natural supplements, remedies, and immunity support for fall colds and flu on Twitter, Facebook, and sunflowernatural.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of pumpkins, corn stalks, gourds, flowers, and decorations for fall, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sunday, 9 to 4, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, qfcc.com. And Safe Harbors of the Hudson, Newburgh, presenting a musical evening with Steve Katz, founding member of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, in the lobby at the Ritz Theater, Saturday, October 12th at 8. RitzTheaterNewburgh.org.
one 800 348 2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We talk comics and pop culture today with Ron Mars and Rick Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. It is 2:41. Back to the phones we go. And let's go, okay, we'll go to Carl in Palatine. Hello, Carl.
Hello, friend Graf. How are you?
Good. How are you?
How could these wonderful authors connect to one of your favorites? I believe his first name is Bob Sherman. And the whole subject of astronomy. It seems to me that's a...
Oh, Doug Berman. Oh, no, not Doug Berman. Bob Berman. Yes.
Bob Berman.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, astronomy, astrophysics.
Okay. All right.
It seems to me this is a vast subject. And there are in existence a number of subjects in the comic field over the years that have concentrated on, you know, the universe, let's say.
Okay. All right. Well, so...
But my second question tied in with that is, do they bring in their thinking of storylines, the occult and mysticism, or even Greek fables? Such as Iliad, Homer.
Sure. So, Ron, are you a druid?
Not during the day.
Okay. All right. So, what about the occult?
Sure. It's all grist for the mill. It's all fodder. We make up stuff, so we steal from everybody, including Homer, including the occult. Doctor Strange is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, that is an odd one.
And he's a tough character to get right, which is why his series never seemed to last very long. But still, one of my favorite, absolute, wonderful characters. Very much an artifact from the '60s, I think. Living in Greenwich Village and
lava lamps, the whole nine yards.
But it's just it's cool.
And
right.
Things like Greek fables, go on and on. You see them repeated over and over again in every comic book storyline for the most part. At some point, Greek fables come into play.
You talked about Wonder Woman before. That's really where all that stuff comes from. And it's a very modern superhero tale, but the roots of it are very much from Greek myth.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bill in Stockbridge. Bill, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. And good day to you, gentlemen. Like Ray, I appreciate the art. So I think that you're doing a great job with the show. I just have two kind of odd questions, I guess, but since I'm on, I'll go ahead and let them rip. One, why do they call them comics when there's it seems like it's more drama than funny to me. I never laugh out loud when I read a comic book. So why do they call them comics?
Well, there are a lot of stand-up comics that aren't really funny either. So,
ouch, man! Ouch.
Zing. That's a good one.
I think it actually, Rick will probably correct me and make me look stupid, but I think the original comics were in the newspaper. Were the funnies in the newspaper, and I think that's where the term came from initially, because the first comics were collections of newspaper strips.
Yeah, and you still have some people over a certain age that refer to them as the funny books. So this is kind of where it comes from.
You have anything else, Bill?
I did have one more question. I would ask the gentleman's opinion on if they were to do a comic book on Congress today, today's Congress, what would that seem like, and what would their opinion be on that?
Brilliant.
I think that it would be very, very boring. I don't know if I would read that, because I can't even watch C-SPAN for that long. I don't know if I would read the comic book version.
Comics about people not doing their jobs are generally not the best fodder.
All right, Bill, that's great.
One more, Ray. We'll just think about Ted Cruz in leotards or a tight suit. I mean, you could get some mileage out of that, right?
I'm not going to sleep now.
Yeah, thanks for that image. All right, let's go to Glenn in Newburgh. Glenn, you're on.
Hi. I tuned in late. Someone else may have asked this question, but if you have some old comics, are there some reliable places to sell them? I've collected them back in 1966 and 67, and I'm not sure how much they're worth.
Yeah, we had talked about this a little bit earlier. Basically, take a look around online, catalog what you have, take a look, do some searches online. eBay and places like that actually are a really good gauge for how much things are worth. And even if you want to, bring it to your comic shop, let them know what you have, and they can probably give you a pretty good assessment of what some of the things might be worth.
It's the grading of the condition that is more important, isn't it? In other words, on eBay, you'll find any number of different values. And it really comes down to very fine, or whatever however they grade them these days.
At this point, so many comics past a certain age are pretty much in this one large area of condition.
Yeah.
Usually, it's assumed that they're going to be kind of beat up if they're a certain age. So it's
all right.
Right.
Well, good luck, Glenn. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Let's see here. Paul in Hillsdale is on. Paul, you're on.
Hey, how are you? Shazam!
Wow.
Yeah, Shazam. Why haven't they made a movie of Captain Marvel, my favorite?
Oh, that one's actually been sort of... They've tried several times to make this movie. They had scripts. They've had producers. They've tried to get that movie off the ground many, many, many times. There's been issues with what to call it. Do you call it Shazam? Do you call it Captain Marvel? Will that confuse people, because Captain Marvel is actually a DC Comics hero?
He was Marvel Comics.
Oh, you're talking about the Captain Marvel as in... Okay, because there's been several different ones.
Yeah.
There's Captain Marvel as in Shazam, and then there's Captain Marvel as in the well, not to get too nerdy, but the Kree soldier, half-Kree alien guy who...
No, No.
Yeah, there's been a whole bunch of them. There's also been female Captain Marvels. But the one that's gotten the farthest in the movie stage was the DC Comics hero, Shazam.
And they rebooted that not too long ago.
Well, right? You're saying that's DC, but it was yes. Marvel Comics.
No, it was DC. No, it was
Shazam
actually,
was DC.
It was actually initially Fawcett Comics.
Yes.
Back in the 40s and 50s. Right. And that's when... That's when Captain Marvel rivaled Superman,
mm-hmm. Right?
And,
exactly.
And eventually DC gobbled up Captain Marvel because it was competition for Superman.
And there was a great early '70s Superman that had Captain Marvel and Superman fighting it out on the cover.
That's when DC started to publish Captain Marvel comics, or eventually they were called Shazam because they had let the copyright slip, or the trademark slip, and Marvel grabbed it. Even back then, Marvel and DC didn't like each other very much.
And, of course, you remember the horrendous 1970s Saturday morning live-action show. Do you recall?
That
Shazam program?
The best superhero program based around an RV ever created.
Yeah. You've seen the show.
Well, it's funny, for a while with that Shazam movie that was coming out, The Rock there, Dwayne Johnson, was campaigning. I believe he almost got as far as being cast as the villain in that movie, Black Adam. And, just never got off the ground, kept falling apart.
Let's go to Joanne in Enfield, Connecticut. Hi, Joanne.
Yes, good afternoon. I just felt obligated to call in and let the entire world know that if you try the incantation, Mary Jane's shrinkage incantation, the way it was given, you're not going to shrink because she left off the beginning, see? You have to say magic words of poof, poof, piffle. Make me just as small as Sniffles. See? You have to have the whole incantation or it doesn't work.
And did it work for you just now?
Absolutely.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. But also what I wanted to say was if anybody recalls her, the way she was drawn, we still have Mary Jane shoes.
Really? Hang on.
Oh, absolutely. Standard.
Pull this out of the wastebasket.
Yeah, the shoe industry
still
calls, it's the style of shoe that she wore. So practical for playing outdoors, don't you know?
Oh, they look practical, yeah.
Little, tiny, 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 very delicate feminine black flats with an ankle strap.
Yeah.
And that, to this day, is still called a Mary Jane.
Amazing. Joanne, that is a great call,
go.
And thank you for the magic incantation. Let's go over to Jake in Ackard. Jake, you're on.
I was wondering if you could make comment on R. Crumb. And the underground comics that came out of the West Coast, like in the, I think probably late 60s, early 70s, and still is around.
Anybody?
Well, there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, we just... coming out of that whole R. Crumb, era, Harvey Pekar, I mean, just...
70, would have been 73 yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. So it seems well-timed there. It's... That whole era is still sort of... alive and well in certain comic scenes. You just have to find the comics. They're not as, you know, it's still underground in a lot of ways.
I think it's very
popular, like in Germany and in Europe. In fact, he moved to Europe.
Yeah, over in...
it's all been, you know, it was all self-published stuff.
Well, I think Crumb is still seen as one of the, you know, one of the geniuses of the medium.
Yeah.
He's really one of the few that came out of that scene that is still around, but the underground scene has really turned into the alternative scene.
He's also has entered the art world. I mean, like the New York art world and the art world in Europe.
What I find
he's like kind of gone to. He's still, you know, like in the comic book range, but he's gone to like another level.
Well, what I find really interesting is if you go to, for instance, in Sweden and a few other countries there, that style that R. Crumb sort of is known for, that sort of memoir, biographical sort of rough style that he had there, that's the dominant form of comic in certain countries, not superheroes.
I just can't think of it at the moment, but he drew for Mad Magazine, who was a really big influence on all those guys. And the name just slipped my mind.
You probably mean Harvey Kurtzman.
It's just slipped my mind. But that seems to be like,
Drew Friedman?
In a way, for me, it touches on a spirit of comic books that's that just doesn't exist anymore.
All right, Jake, thanks a lot. Let's go to Don in Great Barrington. Don, you're on.
Hi, folks. I haven't heard it spoken of on any of these shows, and I might have just missed it, but classic comics. It was a very big part of my junior high school and high school life. Are you familiar with
Illustrated
that?
Illustrated
like Classics Illustrated. Yeah. I think I first read the story of Tale of Two Cities that way.
Exactly. That was a biggie.
Sure. We all read those because
Treasure
we didn't want to actually read the novel for the book report we had to do
of
the next
day. Of course.
The first Cliff Notes.
We got away with it for about a month, and then the dorky teacher, so we thought, caught on, and he would ask on our book reports, we'd have to give a stand-up, and he'd say, well, what did you think about so-and-so and so-and-so? And that wasn't in classic version. It was so anyway, my question is, are they still around?
I don't, you know, since all that stuff is in public domain, people do adaptations of them. They're not actually billed as classic comics anymore because I don't think that publisher exists anymore. But there are adaptations of that sort of material.
That was a great introduction to literature. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Don, thank you very much. Okay, now this is a question from Andrew in Stafford that I was wondering about, so we'll let Andrew make the question. Andrew, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering, what do you look for in an artist that you're working with as a writer? And the other part of that question is kind of when you do make the script and you're working on it with the artist, how long does it take to kind of produce the art before you go to print?
My editor would tell you it takes too long. What I look for in an artist, first and foremost, is storytelling ability. The script process is that I write the script, break everything down into panels. The artist draws it. Then I'll go back in and rewrite the dialogue to fit what's on the page. To me, first and foremost, the artist has to be able to tell the story. The audience should be able to look at the pages without any words on them and understand the basics of the story. It should be clear, concise, obviously fairly artful. And it should also, the style of the artist should be matched to the story. It's not, you know, this can be an assembly line process and you're not really that familiar with the people that you're working with. But I try to make sure that I know the artist that I'm writing for. I write to that artist's strengths and away from the weaknesses. Takes me about a week to write a script. Takes the artist, and that's for, you know, a 20 or 22 page comic.
Yeah.
Takes the artist anywhere between 4 and 5 weeks to do the job.
Mm.
So if I'm, you know, if I'm giving him or her a script to write that they're going to have to live with for the next month or 6 weeks, I'd better make sure they're having fun drawing it because otherwise this job becomes too much like work.
Right. Is the inker involved in that at that time too?
Traditionally the penciler would do a batch of 5 pages, send those 5 pages to the inker would finish those, and then they'd get sent to the colorist, and it you know, everybody sort of works in lockstep.
Is it pretty open to do both sides of it as far as like the penciling and inking, just be the one artist that does it?
It is now because a lot of guys are working digitally, and when I say guys, I mean male
right.
and female artists.
Sure.
Working digitally has sped up the process to a certain extent because if you're working digitally, you're basically doing your own inks. And a number of artists are doing their own colors now. So, you know, these are...
Do you feel that the pre-rendered backgrounds do justice to the story as far as mood is concerned?
Well, it depends on how well they're integrated, really.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of shortcuts that you can take. The less obvious they are, the better they are, obviously.
Right.
All right. Andrew, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
In the minute or two we have left, let's talk about New York Comic Con. It's coming up, right?
This upcoming weekend. It is the biggest show in the U.S. After San Diego there. So we've got our own great, huge...
San Diego is bigger?
San Diego's yes. Yes. Very, very much bigger.
Why would that be?
Well, it's got more influence from the movie TV side, from the Hollywood side, because it's on the West Coast already. They don't need to send everybody over here. New York doesn't get as much of the movie TV scene simply because it just costs so much to send people across the country.
And they've got more floor space in San Diego than they do at the Javits Center.
Yeah.
And the weather's great.
But the Javits Center is going to be packed out this entire weekend. It'll be a madhouse. I'll be down there Friday and Saturday, at least maybe spilling over into Sunday. And it's...
As a spectator, or will you be...
No, I've got signings and meetings and stuff like that, and it's sort of, you know, the one in addition to San Diego that everybody is sort of expected to attend because everybody else is there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I'll be there Friday through Sunday as well, and it's sort of fantastic to go there and see, especially if you've gone in consecutive years. I remember when it was a lot smaller not too long ago when they were just sort of starting out, and now it very much rivals San Diego just in terms of the how much they pack into that area.
What are you expecting? Anything exciting on the horizon that you expect to learn more about?
I think they're going to have the Walking Dead crew there, so that's going to be a big draw. But on the comic side, there's always a lot more focus on comics at New York Comic Con than at San Diego. So there's a lot more going on that you'll hear about in the DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, all of the publishers that are out there. You'll hear about their things a lot more than you would than anything that happened at San Diego, which I really appreciate because I like the comic side of the Comic Cons.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Ron Mars and Rick Marshall, for being here, and thanks to everybody who called in today. We'll have to do this again at some point and get to kind of a, what do you call it? You have to tell us about how the Comic-Con went and what's happening.
We'd love to.
Yeah.
We'll give you the rundown.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, the rundown. Support comes from Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing 24-hour emergency and critical care for dogs and cats every day, including all holidays. VESHDeerfield.com. H. Houst and Son, True Value Hardware, and Just Ask Reynolds, Woodstock, New York, locally owned since 1932, providing tools and materials for home care projects. True Value, start right, start here, hhoust.com. And Albany Institute of History and Art, GE, presents the Mystery of the Albany Mummies exhibition, now open. International loans, interactive displays, and ancient Egyptian shop, albanyinstitute.org. Remember, the conversation will continue online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. And I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for a news update.